Canucks Central Thursday. It is the eve of the NHL entry draft, where the Canucks, we expect, to be selecting 15th overall. We expect it? I mean, I don't know. We're like 24 hours away from the first round beginning. I would expect that they make their pick at this point.
Would you? I don't know what to expect.
Okay.
You're pretty confident with it. I mean, you've been making some confident predictions about what's going to happen in this draft, so maybe I should just go with you.
Yeah, maybe.
Dan was... No, it's not a Conspiraccio. It's not a Jinxio.
Dan Stradamus?
Dan Stradamus. There
we go.
Dan Stradamus.
We'll have some more predictions coming up later on in the program. Maybe not. Landon Ferraro is going to join us. We'll also talk to Tony Ferrari about the draft, his take on what we should expect to see tomorrow, and a mailbag, because tomorrow's Friday program will be wall-to-wall draft coverage, so we won't have time for a mailbag. We have moved the mailbag to this afternoon. A lot to get into. Things continue to develop. And we come to you from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. And of course, this hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. Let's get to the open.
Welcome to the open.
Four! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yeah, it's the open on Canuck Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. The latest being... Well, I guess the latest being an update from Frank Saravalli on a contract extension the Canucks may be getting ready to solidify, to cross the T's, dot the I's on... for July 1st, and that being Connor Garland. It can't be official until July 1st, but Frank reporting that they've made significant progress on an extension for Sats' favorite player, Connor Garland.
Yeah. Well,
you're a big Garland fan. Yeah, I know this.
I mean, love Connor Garland.
Yeah.
It's not unexpected.
No.
Right? Because like, this is something that has been discussed now for a while. Where did it begin from again? Like, where did it start?
Elliot first reported it on 32 Thoughts, I think, about a couple weeks ago.
A couple weeks back, right?
Yeah.
So it goes back. So it's nothing new necessarily, but a lot of progress has been made, which makes sense because this is the time we heard about Demko yesterday too, progress being made, because you can sign an extension come July 1st.
Yeah.
You have the draft coming up. This is trading season right now. And if you don't have certainty about a player's future, you have to consider moving them. So it makes sense that this has become a pressure point to at least get an idea about where things are going. So the question really just comes down to, what does Connor Garland ultimately sign for?
So I've put out a number range that I feel makes sense for Connor Garland.
That you feel makes sense.
Now, I broke one of our own rules on Canuck Central because I went with the AAV rather than the total value of the contract, which is, as we try to tell you all the time on this show, and certainly Sat does more than I, the total value of the contract matters more than the average annual value. So... And, you know, you see this in term, because if a guy wants a four-year term at $28 million, that's quick math, carry the one. That's, what, $7
million
per?
$7 million.
But if, you know, that's all of a sudden a six-year term at $28 million, the value comes down quite a bit. The average annual value comes down quite a bit. So that obviously changes depending on term. But I'm thinking of this because he's going to be 30 when the time of this contract kicks in. I'm not expecting this to be more than 4 years, maybe at most 5 years on an extension for Connor. If they didn't want to go 6 years for Brock Besser, I can't imagine they're going to want to go into a sixth year for Connor Garland. That's what I'm basing this on. So 6% of a cap that is projected to be at $104 million next summer. That would be probably in the ballpark, 6.5 7.75 on the high end,
yeah,
depending on how many years?
It's a fair point, yes. And you're not wrong. But I think one thing you have to bake in is now you're talking about age 34, 35-year seasons, if you go 4 to 5 years. And is that the type of percentage of cap that those years should also be carrying, right?
Right.
So I think that is something that would bring it down a little bit. I think the range is going to fall between 5.5 to 6.5 million between 4 to 5 years.
Okay. So significantly less than where I'm at.
I don't think it'll be above 6 million.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably be in the 6 million range. I don't think it gets to 7. Yeah. I'll be surprised if it gets to 7.
It would be a lot to go up to $7 million. I do agree. One of my feelings on this too is, okay, what do you think a player should get? Mm-hmm. Tack on $1 million to it. That's where I'm at with some of these contracts that we like Fabian Zetterlund, like, yeah, that guy got that much.
Yeah, but he's 26.
Okay, fair enough.
And he's already had like some bigger years than Garland had, or close to, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, Garland's coming off a 19 goal season and 50 points, right? Like, we're not talking about a guy coming
he's
off
a consistent like 450-ish point player.
Yeah, but to me that doesn't scream
$7 million.
And as much as that's what he signed for a percentage of cap last time, what would the market be for a guy like Connor Garland? I think this offseason is going to really tell us what the market is going to be like. We see with guys like Hugh Suter, for instance, mm-hmm, and some other players, because the cap has gone up, does that mean that some of these players are necessarily going to get significantly bigger money and more term? And this year will kind of tell us a little bit about that. But we know that Garland is a player who not every team is going to be after. So it makes it, I wouldn't say a niche market for him, but it makes it a smaller market for him, right? So that's why I wonder if the money may not be quite as big as you would project based on some of the points. But it's going to be big. Like, he's not going to make less than he made on his previous contract.
Like, no, you know,
he's
not like going to make... If you want him to make... Yeah.
He made almost $25 million. Like, his next contract's going to be worth more than $25
million. I'd be pretty surprised if the AAV comes in under $6 million. I would. You know? Again... 6% of the cap when he signed his last contract, which was also given by the Canucks by Jim Benning shortly after they made the trade that acquired him from and Oliver Ekman-Larsson from the Arizona Coyotes at the time. I can't imagine he's signing for much less than 6% of the cap. So yeah, that's why I'm ballparking it in that range. And yeah, it is uncomfortable. I mean, the tweet that I've put out is like largely negative. Like, what? Connor Garland, what?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, clearly these aren't the people that were chanting his name at Rogers Arena last year.
But everybody likes Garland because the price is good.
The price is right, right now.
Exactly, but everyone has a price that you feel good and bad about, right?
Wow, Ted DiBiase doing multiple appearances on the show this week. This is unbelievable.
The price is right. The price is right.
Everybody's got a price.
Everyone's got a price. Everyone has you like a player based on how much they're making to some degree, don't
largely,
you?
Largely, yes.
Do you think Connor... Kiefer Sherwood would be as big a fan favorite who's making $6 million per year? They love him. They'd be happy with him, but it's $6 million. Be like, you know, it's a lot of money for a guy who just had, you know, 18 goals or whatever, right? Same thing for Garland. Now, all of a sudden, for a guy who scored 19 goals, if he's making $6 or $7 million, mm-hmm, you feel a bit different about how he's contributing, right?
It's not something that is inspiring a lot of confidence, but it does tell us, like, how are they planning to build out this team here in the next little while, Sat? Like, they've clearly identified Garland as somebody they'd like to keep. We'll see where the numbers end up on this. But, you know, from a total value, it's probably going to be, what, in the $30 million range?
I think it's
25 to 30 again.
Yeah, I'd say I'm going to give a range.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. I mean, five and a half to six and a half, depending on term, and total money, 25 to 30.
Yeah.
If he gets 30, that great for him.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised, but we'll see ultimately where it falls. To your point, cap's going up. We have to reframe how we view these contracts, right? But as far as what does this mean, we knew they were going after Garland, but you saw who they went after and traded for in Evander Kane.
Yeah.
We know they were after Mason Marchment.
Mm-hmm.
We know they want to add a player who's a stiff two-way centerman who can play well defensively. They like Rossi, but they they've been after that type of player.
Somebody,
right,
who can complement Elias Pettersson and Filip Hedl through the middle of the ice.
Yes. You're keeping Connor Garland, not the biggest player. You have term with Nils Höglander.
Mm-hmm.
You can understand where Suter, why he doesn't quite fit profile-wise, and what the Canucks are trying to become. We know goaltending-wise, if you sign Demko to an extension, as it's being suggested, it's going to likely happen. And you have potentially a top-five defense in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
And that's just not just us saying. I mean, I've seen The Athletic rank the Canucks defense as number five in the National Hockey
Honestly,
League defense group.
You'd have to be mad to rank the Canucks defense right now outside the top 10.
Yeah. It's if you want to be negative about it, you put them 8, 9 yeah. or something, right? But nonetheless, that's where they kind of fall. Goaltending, we know, could, again, be one of the best tandems in the league. The forward group falls way behind.
Yes.
You know, and by rankings, you probably put them
bottom
near the
third.
Yeah.
Easily bottom third of the league.
Yeah. So we know there's a long way to go forward group-wise. But Evander Kane moves it a bit because now you've, at least to some degree, replaced Besser, but you replace Besser with a profile that's slightly bigger and faster.
Mm-hmm.
And if they add a couple bigger and faster players, especially now that they have Garland, I think they want to add a bit more size to the team. Can they make this forward group into a big, physical, fast group that may not be the highest in talent, but has a couple guys in Pettersson, for instance, but is going to be held to play against shift in and shift out? Because if you look at it already, if they keep Joshua, you have Joshua, you have DeBrusk, you have Evander Kane, you have Drew O'Connor. All these guys have size and speed. And then you have guys like Kiefer Sherwood. And then you have guys like Hoglander and Garland. When they're at their best, they're pesty, get in on the forecheck players who are hard to play against. If Pettersson finds his game, can you add a couple other players who are hard to play against? And I wonder if that's really what this team's going to be looking to do this offseason at this point, especially if you can't get Rossi, because we know the asking prices. We'll get to that in a bit. We know they couldn't get a guy like Peterka.
Mm-hmm.
Do you lean into having as big and fast and hard to play against forward group as possible? It may not be the most exciting hockey, but
yeah,
you're probably going to win a lot of games in the regular season. Your ceiling in terms of winning a Stanley Cup is probably not there, but could you put yourself in a position where you feel like, okay, great defense, great goaltending, we have all the role players, we have a hard forward group to play against, now we're finally a piece or two away by the end of the season. Can you get that far this year?
Is that like a team build that's of a bygone era?
Is it though?
Like, we're talking about teams from like the 2000s that had success playing like this.
Well, I mean, the Florida Panthers, if you look at them, the thing that really stands out is they're big, they're fast, they have great two-way players. They have a lot of skill. That's what you're trying to model after, but a poor man's version, a real poor man's version. But you're not going to be able to find all your answers this offseason anyways.
No.
Because what happened with Florida, the reason they ended up, you know, going over the top and winning Stanley Cups is they had traded for a guy like Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah.
They changed things around. I mean, they went from a couple skill guys.
Traded for Tkachuk, traded for Bennett, traded for, you know, a lot of guys.
Yeah, but it's the profile you're going towards. And we know the Canucks this year, even if they add a really good needle moving forward, they're not going to be a cup contender right away.
No.
And with Quinn, I don't think the goal is to become a cup contender in 2 months to convince Quinn to stay. It's about, can you get close enough that you have a pathway that's realistic and you feel that the team is competitive enough and hard, you know, and has a chance of being a team that can do something if you get a chance.
Yeah.
When you're a piece or two away.
It feels like, I don't know if we ever considered the like 06, 07 Nashville Predators to be like close, but they had on defense a young Ryan Suter, young Shea Weber, Kimo Tiimonen, Dan Hamhuis was on those. Like, what an incredible top four.
Yeah, great goaltending.
You know?
Yeah.
You're talking about four incredible defensemen as your top four. They had great goaltending. Their forward group lacked a lot to be desired. But they did have, you know, an elder Paul Kariya. They had an elder Peter Forsberg.
They traded for Forsberg at the deadline. And that was that year they were a good team. They were a piece or two away. They traded for Forsberg and then just didn't work out for them in the playoffs. But they were really good that year.
So, like, that's kind of what we're looking at. But that's a 2007 team that, you know, even still, without all those good pieces that they had, were kind of out of the playoffs in the first round pretty much almost every year.
Well, because ultimately, you need a Forsberg to be a part of your foundation for years, not, hey, here's one kick at the can. You know, because even with MacKinnon, you saw after the Cup, like, you're not guaranteed to win in playoff series despite having great players and great teams.
Yeah.
It still happens that you're going, like, look how often Colorado's lost in the first round now since winning the Stanley Cup. There's no guarantee, even if you have these players and solid teams that are expected to win in the playoffs. But can you at least get closer? And if you look at it realistically, what's your best path to being competitive this upcoming season?
This is the best path. It's the best path, and it's a path that I can see working again if, you know, it comes back around. What do we always say? the conversation always ends up back at Elias Pettersson. But if Pettersson becomes and is one of the top 10 centermen in the league, or gets to that level like we've seen him get to in the past, all of a sudden, you know, you've got somebody driving your forward group and one of the better decors in the league, plus a great goalie tandem.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, not that wingers are interchangeable. You need at least one star winger, and this team has none.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, the closest thing you have now is Evander Kane. DeBrusque has a potential to. You saw him score 27 goals, but Evander Kane is the closest thing at the age of 33.
Yeah.
To being that, and we know he's probably not going to be that.
So you still need a couple of play drivers up front. I think that's obvious. But as long as Pettersson gets back to that level, you kind of are, with the defense that they have now, you kind of are like two-ish pieces away.
Mm-hmm.
Two big pieces, huge pieces. You really need a second-line center. But like ultimately, when you have Pettersson, Hughes, and Demko, you've got like three studs right there.
So as long as Pettersson is
as
back
long
to
as
being
Pettersson
that.
Is that guy, which there's a lot of doubt around that. But if Pettersson's that guy, you know, it really allows you to kind of be focused on where are the two or three things that we really need to add to this group.
Yeah.
Because, you know, ultimately, like, I don't mean to diminish like how much guys mean in the bottom six, but like, you can have a great bottom six. Doesn't matter if your top six isn't good enough. We all know this.
That's
where the Canucks are stuck right now, and they're the hardest pieces to get.
And that's a conundrum with a guy like Pew Suter, where you look at the profile of the team that you already have, and as much as Suter is really good and there are a lot of things that he does for you, how much more can you spend on guys that are ultimately not going to play at the top of your lineup? And how much do you spend on players who play his roles, especially when you already traded for Hedl, who's making $4.5 million playing on your third line, essentially?
Yeah.
So, and even Dakota Joshua making a little bit of money. And besides the size profile and what you need in terms of being a faster and harder team to play against, Suter is hard to play against. He's really good. But I can see how it doesn't quite fit where you want to go, and also how much money you have to spend moving forward. Now, ultimately, they may end up coming back to Pew Suter if they can't find other things. But it's really clear what their priority is.
And ultimately, like, what makes this type of build intriguing, when your defense is as good as the Canucks project to be, you know, they shouldn't spend a lot of time in their own end. They should be able to break the puck out well enough. They should be able to drive possession from their defense and not just rely on Quinn Hughes to be that sole solver of that problem, because they have a lot more depth on the back end.
Yeah, if you look at how the team is built now, they have a lot of forecheckers on the wing, which is exactly what they want. But they're kind of built to be the type of Rick Tocchet, Adam Foote team and identity that this organization has won. Just go through the list again. As I mentioned, look at the wing. Like, even a guy like Drew O'Connor. Now, Drew O'Connor can stand to be more physical, but you see how he forechecks, how fast he is, and the size he has, and the straight-ahead game that he plays with. Evander Kane is very similar. Not quite as fast, of course. A bit more physical, but this forward group just has a lot of forecheckers right now.
A lot to get into in the Canucks Central Roundup. Buffalo yesterday, last night, trading J.J. Paterka to Utah for Michael Kesselring and Josh Doan. My first thought on it was like, well, seems a little light. I do like Kesselring, and Josh Doan looks and projects to be a pretty good player in his own right. Played mostly sheltered minutes in Utah this past year. But the way I view it is, ultimately, Buffalo looked for the best right shot D-man that they could get in return for J.J. Paterka, and that's how they honed in on Utah as the team that they wanted to trade with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very clear what Buffalo was after.
Yeah.
And as much as we can look at it monetarily, too, because there's a huge monetary discrepancy between
Kesselring and Doan are making, like, nothing for the next year.
But eventually, they're going to get paid if they're good players.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted a right-hand defenseman, and they wanted a prospect or a young four they felt good about.
They really needed a right-shot defenseman. As I mentioned, when we talked to Frank Saravalli the other day, and he talked about how the Canucks trade talks with Buffalo had been centered around Paterka and Byram. Ultimately, you know, when you go through the process of elimination, well, the only options in that scenario are Pettersson or Hronek. Clearly, Buffalo was looking for a right-shot D-man. That would have been Filip Hronek. And obviously, Didn't go too far down the road, those talks. But Frank did say there was a lot on the table for J.J. Paterka, which was pretty interesting. Elliot Friedman reporting that Nick Ehlers will test free agency, so he'll be one of the better wingers on the market. Marner, Besser, and Ehlers, probably the top three UFAs to come on July 1. Michael Russo reporting that the Wild are willing to play it out, and I guess I'll use this term, play hardball with Marco Rossi to if they don't get someone that can replace his production right away. So, you know, a lot of people have been asking me, like, how is 15th overall not enough? Especially when you look at some of these other trades that have been made. You look at the Zegras trade. How could they be asking for more than the 15th overall pick? It's not that they just want more than the 15th overall pick. They want something to replace the 60 points that Marco Rossi brought to them last year, and they need it right away.
Well, and something that Guerin has done here is he's drawn a really hard line in the sand as far as what he's asking for and what he wants. And can he maintain credibility by dropping those demands significantly by the draft?
Yeah.
I'm not sure he can.
They hold all the leverage with Marco Rossi. Remember, like, when RFAs, there's the potential of an offer sheet. But when an RFA doesn't have arbitration rights, the team holds so much leverage. Guerin's going to use that in this situation. And potentially, this ends up in a bridge contract for Marco Rossi. I don't think they worry too much about the offer sheet, because if a team gives Marco Rossi, let's say, $7 million per, like, okay, great, we'll take your first-round pick in 2026 unprotected and see what we can do with that, or hold on to it and see what it becomes for us. Darren Dreger saying multiple first-round picks are in play as teams search for young talent to help. Now, this kind of goes in part and parcel with the conversations we've been having, Sat, and why the 15th overall pick doesn't have a ton of trade value right now. Pittsburgh would be willing to move 11 or 12. Montreal would be willing to move 16 or 17. Philly would be willing to move their two first-round picks that are later, not the sixth overall, but they're two late first-rounders. I mean, you add all that up, and you can see why the value of the 15th overall pick has diminished in trade for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and it all always comes down to supply and demand. And when you have a lot of first round picks to choose from,
yeah,
and we'll see ultimately by tomorrow how much of this is really
speculation
true.
Or true.
Yeah. And one thing I have heard is when you hear a lot about these first round picks being available, oftentimes they're being offered, but then there's an ask about picks coming back, like a future pick of this sort,
right.
And pretty high picks. And that's what ends up, you know, slowing things down. So I was kind of told it's like the context sometimes is important. For instance, the Chicago thing we saw last
third overall,
night, third yeah. overall, was that offered? Maybe Chicago wanted the pick back in some ways. And you
kinda
can look
like
at it and say
a pick swap plus Paterka.
Who knows? I'm not reporting or saying anything, but I'm saying sometimes we see it on the outside. Like, how come they didn't just take what was offered in that way? It's like we didn't have the full picture about what it all looked like.
It's part of the contract or trade conversation, not the full part. Framework of a new CBA agreed upon, according to multiple reports, could be officially announced as early as tomorrow. 84-game season starting in the 2026-2027 season. Max term dropping from 7 years to from 8 years to 7 years for re-signing with teams, and obviously from 7 years to 6 years with UFAs, which ultimately it gives players more control of their futures, and I think it's probably better for the league that guys won't be locking up to 8 year terms in the future, because it kind of stagnates any kind of movement from contractual perspectives.
I'm a fan of it. I really am, because I think 7-8 years is too long. I love what the NBA's got going on, even shorter
four and five,
and creates more movement, creates more, I think, flexibility for teams and even players.
Yeah,
and with the cap going up, if you know you're making a lot of money, you don't worry about it as much. In the NBA now, this is not going to happen right away in hockey at the very least, but you can sign a 2-year deal making $40 million per year.
Yeah, and it creates cycles that are quicker for teams, so more teams end up, as we're seeing now in the NBA, more teams end up going in and out of their cycles quicker, and that can be good for parity of the league, which is something commissioners like. I don't know if I like it too much. Evgeny Kuznetsov planning an NHL comeback. Should be interesting. And Mark Edward Vlasic, bought out by the San Jose Sharks, was an incredible defenseman in his heyday, but it's been a while since then. Tony Ferrari will join us next. His take on the upcoming NHL entry draft, what the Canucks could be looking at number 15. Guests on Sportsnet 650, call in on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. You are listening to Canucks Central.